As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Trent Alexander-Arnold is flying in the Premier League.
Strike is there and it's Alexander-Arnold! Who gets it for Liverpool? What a moment for Trent Alexander-Arnold!
A year on from playing a bit part role in Qatar and struggling for form at home, Trent is now excelling for club and country in a bespoke hybrid role.
It's not so much whether I'm a midfielder or fullback or anywhere on the pitch, whether it's an 8 or 6. A double pivot, whatever, it doesn't really matter. It's just, I'm a player who needs to get on the ball. I'm a player that can and wants to dictate the game.
So, is unlocking his immense talent the key to Liverpool's title challenge? And has he finally convinced Gareth Southgate that he has to find a starting place for him for England? I'm Ayo Akinwolere. Welcome to the Athletic Football Podcast. I'm joined by The Athletic's Liverpool writer, James Pearce, senior football writer, Ollie Kerr, and also data analyst, Mark Carey. Oof, where do we start? I mean, yesterday was just a game of bangers, wasn't it? From Endo to McAllister to obviously Trent, but we'll start with you on this, James. Trent, 2 weeks on the bounce, rescuing Liverpool in vital games.
Yeah, he's in an incredible rich vein of form at the moment. And almost two Steven Gerrard-esque contributions, really, back to back in the Premier League to lead that fight back at the Etihad in the way he did and salvage, you know, a real hard earned point against Manchester City the week before. And then, yeah, Sunday was something really special. I know the free kick was obviously taken away from him, went down as a burnt Leno own goal.
Just give it to him. I hate it when that happens. It's his goal.
I know. It's not as if burnt Leno was putting his hand up saying, please put that one down and I'll under my name. It was, you know, what a moment in front of the Kop late on. The scenes will live long in the memory, as Jurgen Klopp said himself. I don't think anyone going to Anfield on Sunday thought that Liverpool v Fulham would be one that you'd be talking about for a long time to come. But that was how it panned out. And it was interesting listening to Klopp afterwards talk about Trent and leadership and how that's been like the next phase in his development, really, because when Liverpool really needed him, like they did at the Etihad the week before and other times this season, he really did deliver for them. And it was another special moment for his growing collection.
Yeah, for sure. And I think Jurgen Klopp even said after that match, I've never sought a game with this amount of worldies, to be honest. And honestly, every one of those goals was an absolute gem. Mark, let's touch on this. James just spoke about this new role he has, Trent, at Liverpool. Sometimes they play him there. Sometimes, obviously, it's sort of like a hybrid role. They play him as a fullback. But how has this positional change been both for him and Liverpool and England? How has it affected the way he's played in the Premier League?
Yeah, well, I thought it was an interesting one. Myself and Andy Jones did a piece on this kind of recently, looking at how his influence has changed, I suppose. I think as much as anything, we know that he can do both, in the sense that if you want a bit more of a playing against maybe a deeper block and you want maybe more crosses, then you can maybe play him as more of a traditional right back. If you want maybe sort of more deep progression, then you can have him in a more central position. I think that he's now proven, there's not much doubt that he can play in either position. I thought it's interesting to kind of look at it from a from a data perspective. That's my role. That's my job to do so. And
get in there, crunch the numbers.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, it makes sense that his actual chance creation, his expected assists, which is the XG, the expected goals value of the shot that is assisted, is actually down on previous seasons, on recent seasons, because he's obviously playing from a more deeper position. He's the one who's maybe starting the ball progression earlier in the attacking sequence than necessarily being the one to get on the end of it and play those sort of simple, you know, balls across to the 6-yard box to be tapped in. And I think that the question that we asked within the piece a couple of weeks ago was, where do you want your best player, your most creative passer within that attacking sequence chain? And I don't know what the answer is. Maybe it is horses for courses, depends on the opposition. But I think it's a pertinent question to ask, to say that, do you want someone like Trent starting off that build-up, that ball progression, and maybe being the one to punch the ball into the half space for Dominic Szoboszlai to pass it to Salah, who'll cross it in for Nunez to finish? He's still key within that attacking sequence. Or do you want him, as knowing that he can put a ball on a sixpence, to be the one to play that ball into the 6-yard box or cross it for Nunez to finish, and to know that he has that creative ability to put it anywhere? So, as I say, I think it depends, but I think it is an interesting question to ask, given how we know how creative he's been and how amazing his assists have been in years gone by. I think it's interesting from a tactical perspective to see how that's changed. And as I say, within this piece, we show that what was his most common sort of medium to long range pass in, you know, before his role change since the start of last season, was that kind of right half space ball to the back post. That's now his sixth most common pass since his role change, which again shows that, you know, he's not the one at the end of the sequence. He's far early on, and that's what we're seeing more commonly. But then he's also getting on the end of these attacking sequences as well, from more central positions, having more shots rather than necessarily being the one to create as well.
Yeah, for sure, Ollie. It's really interesting resilience about Liverpool at the moment. Not obviously playing spectacularly all the time, but seem to be grinding out some really good results at this moment in time.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like grinding, does it? It feels like sort of freewheeling a lot of the time, and there's been a certain chaos to a number of their games. I mean, you look at the number of times they've gone behind in games and the number of points they've won from losing positions, never mind from drawing positions late in games. It's quite striking. It probably tells you both sides of the story, that they've not really been controlling games the way they were sort of 4 or 5 years ago at their absolute peak under Klopp. But I think partly belief, but partly also the changes that they're able to make from the bench. Gakpo had a good impact from the bench yesterday, and we've seen it with other players, Diaz, Nunez, in other games. It feels like they've very often had a plan B or a plan C from the bench, which has been able to inject that different dimension, different intensity into the game. And that, I think, has been a really big factor for them this season. It's not always been something that you've been able to say about their forward line and midfield in particular, that they've had all these attacking options to come from the bench. It often seemed that on the rare occasions they needed it in the past, it would be Divock Origi, but now they seem to be needing different alternatives on an almost weekly basis. And with this array of attacking talents that Klopp now has, that they seem to have got that, and they seem to be finding a way through. And so I think it's as much that as resilience, personally.
James, I'm interested in this sort of relationship with Jurgen Klopp and Pep, his assistant, in sort of reigniting this passion that Liverpool do have, and to the point where some quietly are whispering Liverpool as potential title contenders, but also in the positional change of Alexander Arnold as well.
Yeah, it goes right back to, I think it was the end of March, early April, when Liverpool were stuck in a rut, really, and Klopp and Linders got together and decided that something had to change. And it was Linders' idea, this hybrid role that, of course, we've seen other teams play with, not least Manchester City with John Stones in a similar role. Pep Linders actually said to Klopp, look, I'm so convinced this would work with Trent in this hybrid position that I'd be willing to give up a year's salary if it doesn't work.
Well,
that was what he said to me.
That's a big statement, man. That is a big statement.
It's a big statement, and much to the Dutchman's relief, it's not cost him a penny because 24 Premier League games since they made the switch and just one defeat, and even that was in the most controversial of circumstances at Tottenham with that VAR shambles. So I think it's probably twofold, really. I think one, Liverpool at the time, they needed something to change because they were just stuck in a rut and they just needed something to spark them back into life. But also, I think Trent himself was going through probably the bleakest period he's had because for a long time, his rise in football was just seamless, really, to win everything that he did. You know, pretty much a clean sweep of all the major honours by the age of, 23, you know, lauded as the best right back in world football. And then he suddenly found himself under such scrutiny last season and people picking apart, you know, the defensive elements of his game. And I think he struggled. You know, he's admitted that. I did an interview with him towards the back end of last season where he talked about those tough times. And, you know, you think back to, I think Liverpool got a pasting, didn't they, at the Etihad? What was that, 4-1? And he got tormented, really, by Jack Grealish that day. And you contrast that to when they went back there last week. The difference in Trent, you know, now compared to then is the difference between light and day. And I think, you know, he's really enjoyed that change of role because it's given him something else to think about. I think it's also, you know, made him feel, you know, influential and important in terms of, you know, how much kind of that puts on him to get the team going. And he does love that, operating in that midfield role. And it asks a lot of him because, of course, you know, he's kind of been half and half, really. You know, as soon as Liverpool lose the ball, he's expected to get back and be the right back. But yeah, he's really embraced this kind of positional change. Yeah, it does feel now we're reaching that point where this is a progression to him becoming a central midfielder permanently.
I think it's worth speaking about the out of possession side of things as well, that we're obviously all going to laud his passing ability from more central positions. But I think going back to Pep Linders saying about that, I think another reason was to try and allow Trent to come inside to have an extra body within the midfield because the midfield was quite porous to allow a lot of counterattacks kind of coming through. So if they did lose it, they'd have an extra body to be able to stop the counterattack. Now, again, I've obviously looked into the numbers on this and Liverpool are still quite vulnerable to the counterattack. This season has become, with some of the signings that they've made, really high octane, really transitional, and they've really benefited from that from an attacking perspective. So the numbers here show that Liverpool have had the most direct attacks, which is an opta-defined metric. Let's just say it's a proxy for counter-attacking, so I won't get too much into the specifics. But they've had the most direct attacks, 59 in the Premier League this season. But they've also conceded the second most direct attacks, 49. Only Sheffield United have conceded more in that regard as well. So it really speaks to the idea that Liverpool are playing a lot of transitional football in both directions. And, you know, Trent having so much control on the ball and playing those searching passes, sometimes, and we've seen it with Manchester City, right, having so much control and not allowing that transition to happen by playing those short and sharp passes. I guess what I'm saying is having Trent looking to play those creative passes from central positions does mean that the ball then can come back the other way quite quickly as well. You know, that's why you maybe get a 4-3 every now and again. That's why, you know, Liverpool might be conceding against most opposition, and if they've conceded first in quite a few games early on this season, it's, you know, you have to take the rough with the smooth. You have to see that there's a positive and negative to both of these. And from an out of possession perspective, I'd say that Liverpool haven't quite locked it down, maybe quite in the way that the role change was designed to do back in April when they made it. I think it was the first game was against Arsenal. So, yeah. It's not too negative, but I think it's a bit of pragmatism, a bit of realism towards Liverpool's sort of defensive side of things too.
You're listening to the Athletic Football Podcast with Ayo Akinwalere.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Ollie, from a Trent perspective, what does it say about how the club feel about him when you've now got a system that's kind of playing to his strengths?
It says a lot, doesn't it? I mean, he's been outstanding over the past 5-6 years since he broke into the team. He's gone from being a young right back who was, they were making allowances for in terms of, look, we'll try and cover up whatever the weaknesses, deficiencies there are in his game, to being the guy where we'll think, right, well, let's try and make a team framework that gets the most out of his strengths, because he is our most important player. It's a hell of a tribute, isn't it? When you look at some of the other players in that team, I just sometimes look at it personally, and I don't think this is the majority view on this. I sometimes feel that Salah is slightly marginalised when Alexander Arnold is moving inside, and this is often from the as a starting position from as a right back and moving into a hybrid role in midfield, moving more centrally. We saw it even 2 years ago. This has been a gradual thing, and it's probably pushed Salah wider because he's the guy who has to really provide the width in this new setup. And I think that's even more so if you know, the more Trent moves inside. So people will look at Salah's stats and say, look, they're still amazing in terms of goal contributions, assists, shots. But I feel that it sometimes can take something away from other players. And I'm not totally sold on the idea of him as a midfielder. I don't think Alexander Arnold being at right back was the problem with Liverpool last season. I think the problem was the midfield, and then it sort of snowballed into other issues from there. So I'm a bit sceptical about the whole thing personally. I could see it working, but I don't think the previous system wasn't working. I think there was still a great balance to the team with him at right back. And I think I feel when you look at Liverpool's squad, and I don't think they've really got, I mean, they've got Joe Gomez who sometimes fills in at right back, but I don't think they've got the range of alternatives at right back that would make it easy to put him into midfield full time. Whereas England, they've got this abundance of riches at right back and a real vacancy in midfield. And so I feel like what's right for Liverpool might not be what's right for England and vice versa. So it's I'm slightly torn on it.
Yeah, I think Ollie makes a good point about Salah. It is true that he is stuck out wider for longer, and it does mean that he's away from dangerous areas more than I think is ideal in terms of where Liverpool traditionally, Trent would bomb on wide and then Salah would find pockets of space inside. But I just think what we're seeing is the evolution of the style under Klopp, because he always talks about how you never want to stand still because teams find you out and they find ways to combat you, and you've got to keep changing. And I think that's why Liverpool's midfield has changed beyond recognition, really, compared to what the midfield was in the kind of the first iconic team that Klopp built, where it was all about shape and organisation and being workmanlike and shutting down passing lanes, and the front three scored the goals, the two fullbacks created the ammunition for them to fire. And that was the blueprint. And I think what we're seeing now is a much more pleasing on the eye, more, you know, more progressive, more exciting midfield, where Liverpool now attack teams a lot more centrally. They're a lot less reliant on those wide areas. So that's why I think where we're heading is Trent to become a centre midfielder permanently, because I just think that he is the epitome. If that's the way you want to go, then you want your best passer, your best creative force in those central areas to dictate proceedings like he's shown he can. Picking up on what Ollie said about the lack of other options at right back, I think we might find ourselves in a position where come next summer, a right back is at the top of Liverpool's shopping list, because I think, you know, I think it'll be a bit of a horses for courses approach for the rest of this season. And Joe Gomez is a real solid option as a deputy at right back, but you know, he doesn't give you too much in terms of an attacking sense. They've got young Conor Bradley, who, you know, a Northern Ireland international that they've got real high hopes for. But he's only just come back to fitness. I think he's out for 3-4 months with a stress fracture in his back. So it'll be interesting to see whether he can kick on. You know, we've seen someone like Jarrell Kwanza come from nowhere to play what kind of a dozen games already this season at centre half. So Klopp has shown he's willing to put his faith in young players if they grasp the chances that come along. So yeah, it is interesting. But I do think Trent there fits with how Klopp now sees this team playing in terms of style.
I think it's worth noting as well that Szoboszlai will often be the one to maybe overlap on the right or pull onto the right-hand side, has almost become the foil to Salah at times. But I think, again, looking at Salah's numbers, his creativity numbers are up quite significantly because he is a little bit more the one to provide. But again, maybe spinning a slight negative is that sometimes, I mean, Liverpool came unstuck a little bit against Luton. And I think a reason why was that Luton kind of sat in. They had a strong back five, left no spaces. And typically against a deep block, you have to go round the block. You have to get the ball into wide areas, maybe cross it, which is Liverpool 1.0. That is perfect for them. That's exactly what they kind of have their strength in. And they didn't quite do it quite in the same way. And again, looking at the numbers, there's their crosses, open play crosses per 90 this season, 10.7 per 90, whereas in the previous three seasons, it didn't fall below 15 occasions per 90 in terms of their open play crosses. So it's really clear that they're playing more centrally, as James says, but on occasions where teams will maybe sit off them and against elite sides, you know, you're more likely to get that sort of deeper block. Do Liverpool maybe always have the answer to it with this sort of new style? You need to go around the block. That's where you need Trent pulling wide and playing those dangerous passes. Whereas if you're trying to sort of funnel it into a bottleneck and getting into congested areas, Salah's getting doubled up on in wide areas when you do try and go around it. That's maybe where you can maybe get some frustrating results, a couple of draws here and there, which, you know, when Liverpool are pushing for the title, those draws can be quite costly. So, yeah, I'm the same as the guys. I'm still not totally convinced by it, but I think it's a horses for courses depending on the opposition.
It all started for me in 2005. Life was football. Whenever I had the ball at my feet, I made sure I had those boots on.
Many people have seen the campaign Trent Alexander-Arnold rocking the new Adidas Predators. And look, if you're a football fan, Zinedine Zidane, David Beckham, Steven Gerrard, iconic players that have worn the Predator brand, and also currently Jude Bellingham, Pedri as well. James, in terms of a global star, what do you think Adidas see in Trent that they thought, you know what, we'll give this guy a lucrative boot deal because he embodies something we know will reverberate on a global scale?
The biggest thing undoubtedly is talent and the fact that he's been doing it now at such a high level for so long for one of the biggest clubs in the world. And I think when you throw into the mix as well that, you know, he's now a much more kind of prominent figure in that Liverpool team as well, vice captain, deputising as the captain when Van Dijk isn't out there. You know, the fact that he's got pretty squeaky clean public image as well. You know, he's the kind of person I think that any major brand would be rushing to try and associate themselves with. I think, you know, back in the summer, he launched his, you know, the After Academy, that, you know, which is all about, you know, helping out kids that have been released by academies and fallen by the wayside and giving them employment opportunities. And so he has that social conscience as well, where, you know, I think he is incredible. You know, it's no great surprise that, you know, there's so many people queuing up to try and work with him. You know, Red Bull is another one of his partners where, you know, he's been pictured with the Red Bull Formula One racing team, and he was over at some big fashion launch in Paris for Louis Vuitton, and Jay-Z and Beyonce were at the same event. And that this is the kind of table that he's at now in terms of his profile. And I think also if you're Adidas, you're looking at it and he's still only 25. I mean, it's crazy to think of it. I mean, in fact, watching the game against Fulham, I was thinking, well, I remember watching Trent and Harry Wilson playing in the same youth team when they were 16, 17. And when you think, you know, what Trent has achieved at an age where, you know, usually you'd say, well, a 25-year-old nowhere near their peak. You know, they're still learning their trade. And so, yeah, it's no great surprise that what he's producing on the pitch is reverberating off it in terms of, you know, these big money offers coming at his feet.
Yeah, Ollie, Louis Vuitton, Jay-Z, Beyonce. Sounds like a weekend for you, really. but real talk. Real talk, though, like, I mean, homegrown, you can see it. The similarity with Stevie Gerrard, now he's in that midfield. Gerrard also wore the Adidas Predator boots as well. I mean, there's a real statement here that this is, you know, that Scouse lad who's playing for his boyhood club. And actually, there's something really delicious about that, especially when he's performing on such great form.
Yeah, there's this another dimension to it, which I think is interesting, which is when you go back to the 2000s and that sort of golden generation England team, and you look at people like Steven Gerrard and Ashley Cole and John Terry, Rio Ferdinand, Wayne Rooney, David Beckham, Paul Scholes, etc. They were generally disliked by rival fans. And I don't know whether that's just something about the rivalries at the time and they were so intense. And with a lot of them these days, I mean, Harry Kane, Jude Bellingham is in a different position again because he's playing in Real Madrid and he's away from the sort of toxicity of the Premier League rivalries. But Trent Alexander-Arnold, to me, is not somebody that rival fans particularly dislike. I think they see something they like in him, and they see, and I think it's true of this generation of players generally. I think a lot of them, you know, conduct themselves really well. Marcus Rashford is another who's had great praise for the way he's handled himself off the pitch, and he's now getting a lot of criticism because of the way he's performing on the pitch, which is a different matter. But to me, Trent is one of those that is a guy who, yes, he's probably, yeah, he plays for Liverpool and he's Liverpool's vice captain and he's increasingly the face of Liverpool. But I don't think he would turn off rival fans the way Steven Gerrard did and the way John Terry and Frank Lampard sometimes turned people off if they didn't like Chelsea, or Wayne Rooney turned people off if they didn't like Man United. I don't know whether it's an image thing, whether it's really conscious, whether it's marketing. I don't know. Maybe it's social media, something like that. But to me, Trent is one of those, yes, that doesn't really attract any real animosity. I couldn't tell you much about his private life. He's not plastered over the front pages. I don't know who he's going out with or whether he is at all. Maybe that tells you more about my interests, but it's not. he's just admired for his football and admired as a, you know, an increasingly, you know, rare, you know, local lad made good, and everyone could see he conducts himself the right way and never seems to be in trouble off the pitch. He's really impressive. As are, by the way, the guys I mentioned, you know, Steven Gerrard, Frank Lampard, etc., really great ambassadors for their clubs, their cities, but they just seem to attract this hostility from rival fans and this generation seemed to be strangely above that. It's impressive.
Mark, I want to bring you in here because I just want to finish this section really talking about Liverpool in general. And we sort of said it at the top, sort of whisper it quietly, title challenges. You know, the only team really, I mean, some might say Arsenal did to a certain degree, but have really gone toe-to-toe with Manchester City over the last few years. How realistic is that title challenge this season?
Very realistic. I think that, you know, if you can stay in and amongst it until, you know, spring of next year, then it's absolutely realistic. I think, given the nature of my role, I think I kind of cut through all of the excitement, the narrative, and bring everyone right back down to
earth. Oh, man, what are you doing? Come on, give us some news, man. Give us some good news.
It's more kind of the thought that it is still just over one third of the season gone. And I think that, you know, I've listened to a few other kind of platforms, radio phone-ins and things like that saying, you know, we're definitely going to win the league. And that could be for Arsenal, Man City, Liverpool, whoever. Just over one third of the season gone. I think we all need to just kind of take a bit of stock. Things can swing so quickly. And I think, you know, the pack will not shuffle too much. I think you'll still get the overall structure of the league in terms of the broader picture. But right at that top, then, you know, a difference between a draw in the final few games of the season can really, a draw and a win, I should say, could really really change things. But I think that Liverpool have got the ability to stay in and amongst it. I think one thing I would say is that I always like to look at the underlying numbers, of course, and I look at the expected goals difference, which is a really good proxy of kind of at this stage of the season, rather than looking at points, looking to see what the quality of chances that a team has created and conceded, and obviously the difference between the two, to give a broader indication of where they sit within the league. And at the moment, per 90 minutes, Liverpool have the fourth best expected goal difference. And I think that it's more to do with that defensive vulnerability more so than their attacking firepower. We've spoken about how strong they are going forward. That's undeniable. But that transitional style can leave you open at times. And as I say, we've seen that already. The numbers show it as well. So if they can lock things up a little bit, you know, from a defensive perspective. And that's not to say it's the defenders themselves who are sort of poor here. I think it's the out of possession probably is a broader sense to say that they need to maybe shut down counterattacks or shut down the opposition higher up or at source. But I think if Liverpool are going to continue to mount a title challenge, it'll be more of the out of possession things that need to tighten up. But yeah, they've got as good a chance as Arsenal, potentially Manchester City, though we know how they turn things on in the new year. But yeah, I think they'll be right up there by April, May.
Victorinox, the makers of the original Swiss Army knife, have been a reliable companion for life's everyday challenges, mastering functionality, innovation, iconic design, and uncompromising quality with its products. The Victorinox Swiss Army Knife provides you with all the things you don't think about until you need it. Tweezers, a screwdriver, and even a corkscrew. With the Victorinox Swiss Army Knife, you can be prepared to master everyday life. You can find Victorinox Swiss Army Knives at Dick's Sporting Goods.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You're listening to the Athletic Football Podcast with Ayo Akinwalere.
Let's look at Trent as part of this England setup. And you spoke about it earlier, Ollie. He's previously struggled to break into Gareth Southgate's team on a regular basis. Went to Russia, went to Qatar, but didn't play so much. But now has been listed as a midfielder in recent squads by Gareth Southgate. Considering how congested, I guess, that those defensive positions are, is that the best fit for him in this current squad?
Yeah, I think in terms of England, it is. I think England's squad is very different to Liverpool's in terms of where the strengths of that squad are. I mean, I mentioned the abundance of riches that they have at right back, and Kyle Walker, who's been outstanding as well, seems to be getting better. Reece James, Kieran Trippier, Tino Livramento is sort of emerging. Aaron Wan-Bissaka, etc., etc. It's an incredible pool of right backs, and it's clear that Southgate doesn't fancy Trent defensively as much as he fancies Walker and Trippier, and that's it's an opinion, and it's been rewarded, I think, with good results and good performances. So, I think from his point of view, from England, from an England point of view, and looking at where England are perhaps deficient in the middle of the park, I think it makes a lot more sense. For England, I think it looks like a fairly straightforward decision. Whereas I think it's just that little bit more difficult with Liverpool. And what I don't like particularly is when it becomes this idea that, like, because something works for club, it has to work that way for country, or the other way around, or because it works, where Klopp is being urged to do it for England, this is what England need. You've got to play him at in central midfield. I mean, that's not Klopp's priority at all, nor should it be. I could see a situation where he continues playing this hybrid role for Liverpool at right back and goes into midfield at times, whether it's late in a game or whether it's certain games, and plays for England in midfield. But I don't feel like we've seen any sort of categoric, definitive proof of it with England. I think it's been two games against Malta and two games against North Macedonia so far. And I think, those are the kind of games where we've seen people like, Jonjo Shelvey pull the strings for England in midfield in the distant past. It's not, the acid test is probably not even going to be in the group stage of the Euros. It's going to be in the knockout stages. The games where you're really, really tested and where the success or the positives and negatives of a particular system, particular personnel, it's often tested right at the end or latter stages of a tournament where you can get up against the best teams. And I can see that it might work for England. I'm just not convinced it's that we've reached sort of no-brainer territory for it. If he's not Southgate's first choice at right back, I think, yes, he's got a much better chance of getting in midfield. I can see how it might work, but I still have certain reservations about it personally.
Quick one from you, Mark. I'm just quickly, as Ollie's talking about the Euros, I'm looking at England's group C, Serbia, Denmark, Slovenia. I mean, if you're going to try stuff out, it's not a bad group to do that.
Yeah, it's a good point. I think, as Ollie said, it's maybe in the earlier stages, you could maybe get things done quite quickly with your more front-footed, creative passes. Knowing that this question was going to come up, I thought about this as well and made a couple of notes. And in my mind, I thought of the example of, you know, if you're playing Spain in a semi-final and you need to control possession and just make sure that you've got people who are maybe going to keep it simple for a little bit, not even have the view to look forward, would Trent be that person? We know all of the positives that he brings. He's got the creative passing, but like I mentioned, for club, if you're maybe playing those searching balls forward and, you know, someone doesn't always get on the end of it, then that ball's going to come quickly back at you. And when you're playing again, you know, at the international level, at the highest level, where in a game of such magnitude, do you kind of want that? I don't know. But as you say, quite rightly, in a group stage where it's, you know, the remit is to go and accrue points and it's not a must not lose potentially game, and you want to be on the front foot, then yeah. And there's the time to try it. And if you do make a mistake, there's still time to come back from it. But yeah, in the semi-finals, in the knockout stages, again, without sitting on the fences of horses for courses, I suppose, depending on what you want, because you could maybe bring him on in the latter stages of those sorts of games and think, well, there's no one else who will maybe see this ball, let alone play this ball. And then you can maybe obviously gain the advantage from it there. But to maybe start with Trent in midfield in a high-profile game, which, as Ollie said, they're yet to do. It's been against minnows of, you know, European football so far. So, we're yet to find out whether he can do it at that stage. But as you say, at the group stage, yeah, why not try it?
Yeah, James, let's circle this back to Liverpool, really. I was watching Match of the Day to a football highlight show here in the UK yesterday, and former Tottenham player Jermaine Jennis and Newcastle player was saying that now's the time to move him into midfield. We've seen it several times. Now's the time. But where does he sit? Number six, number eight? What do you reckon?
I think more of a six. I think in where we've seen him step into in this hybrid role where he can get on the ball and dictate play and be the man that kind of kickstarts attacks rather than, you know, bombing into the penalty box as one of the eights. I think, it does feel like that is the way that things are heading at the moment. It's probably a bit too simplistic to just say, well, that's it, just make the change now. Because as the guys said earlier, I think it does depend on the opposition. There's times when it makes sense for Trent to be wider, to use that skill set that he's got when it is very congested in the middle. But I just think you only have to look at him. And I was watching him play against Fulham, and there was one passage of play where, you know, he went out to the left hand side of the penalty box and received the ball off Kelleher. Just the unbelievable, like, belief and enjoyment you can see that he gets from being able to dictate things. And, you know, suddenly he's 70 yards upfield, drifting past players, playing a 1-2 as a Szoboszlai and creating an opportunity. And you just think it clearly is where he sees his future. And I think because of the enjoyment that he gets from that, it's just common sense that that is where we're heading. It's just a case of how quickly it happens because of, you know, what are the other options at right back and who can step up and deliver there and give Liverpool what they need in that department. But yeah, it certainly feels that way now because, yeah, this is like we're seeing the evolution of Trent Alexander-Arnold. It's interesting the fact that Klopp has changed his view, because I remember being sat in a press conference probably just over 2 years ago when I think Trent had played centre midfield against Andorra in whatever qualifier that was. And Klopp was quite, you know, he was quite kind of dismissive of it and said, you know, I don't understand why you would play the best right back in the world or in Europe or whatever word he used. Why would you play him in centre midfield? And I think now he's clearly changed his tune. I mean, one of the big tactical changes during the game against Fulham was to actually bring on Joe Gomez at right back and move Trent into centre midfield permanently. He wasn't in that hybrid role for the last 25 minutes. It was, no, you are you know, the base of the midfield. You are dictating things. You know, when we lose possession, you're not tearing back to right back. And I think that's about the third or fourth time Klopp's done that in recent months. I think Bournemouth away in the Carabao Cup was, I think, the first time this season. So, I think we are seeing that gradual switch. So I think, come next season, without a shadow of a doubt, I think he'll be a centre midfielder.
Yeah, fantastic. Oh, it's nice to hear about Liverpool 2.0 as well as Trent 2.0 as well. Thanks for your time, James, Ollie and Mark as well. Now, don't forget, please remember to rate and review the podcast if you're enjoying it. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be speaking to you for the rest of the week. See you soon.
You've been listening to the Athletic Football Podcast. The producers were Adonis Pratsides and Guy Clark, with additional production by Mike Stavro and Jay Beale. The executive producer was AD Moorhead. To listen to other great Athletic Football podcasts for free, search for The Athletic on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places. The Athletic Football Podcast is an Athletic Media Company production.
The Athletic.